So my topic today is actually part of my PhD research on the basic question I'm trying to address is, how do you figure out how much security is worth to you? And this seems to be a very hard question. There's a lot of companies and a lot of people have trouble figuring out how much they should spend on security and how much a particular product is worth. And as you can probably imagine, it's extremely difficult to try to figure it out because there's so much uncertainty about the future. You don't know if there's going to be more hackers out there. You don't know if there's going to be less. And even worse, you don't know how much damage they can possibly do in the future. So there's a lot of things to take into account when trying to figure out how much security is worth to you. Specifically, three questions that I'm hoping to address are, how much is a specific security product worth? How do you figure out how much that's worth? That is a very big question and is very hard to answer. Second question I'm going to look at is, how much should you spend on security overall? How much is it worth to you to secure your systems? And the final question I'm going to look at is patching worth it? Is it worth it to spend a lot of your time applying patches to your systems? So first of all, how much is a specific product worth to you? How do you figure that out? Traditionally, companies and people try to use a return on investment type of strategy. You look at how much you're currently spending. I spent $1,000 last year cleaning up security problems, so therefore I should spend $1,000. I can spend up to $1,000 fixing security so I don't have to have those problems. So that's the way most people and most companies do it, except there's a big problem with that. There's no guarantee in the future that $1,000 is all the damage that's going to be, all the potential damage that would be done. It could be a lot more. If your company doubles in size, there's a lot more there that can possibly be damaged. And if there's a bunch more hackers out there and they get a lot better, then you're going to have a lot more problems with hackers. So basically, I don't think this approach is very good. It's used a lot, but it's not a very good one because it undervalues a lot of things. So the way I approach the problem is, from a standard economics point of view, economics divides products into three different types of goods. There are search goods, experience goods, and credence goods. A search good is basically any type of canned goods supermarket thing where there's a bunch of identical perfect substitutes, and all you have to do is find the best price. So your whole goal for search goods is to find what is the best price for your good, because they're all the same. They're all effectively worth the same to you. Those are really easy goods, really easy to figure out how to handle those. The second type of goods is experience goods. These are goods where it's really hard to figure out how the quality of the good, how much you like it, how much it's worth to you, until after you've already experienced it somehow. Music is a great example of an experience good. You really don't know whether you're going to like a song until you've heard it. Cars are another example. You don't know if you got a lemon or a really high quality car until after you've bought it. I see some eyes rolling on that one. The third example is credence goods. Credence goods are the hardest. These are the kind of goods where even after you've experienced them, even after you have them, you really don't know what quality they are. Like medical advice or legal advice are good examples of this. Unless you're a lawyer, it's really hard to tell whether you got good legal advice, even after you've gotten the advice. So that's, credence goods are the hardest to value. If you look at security, trying to fit it into this isn't quite clear. It somewhat fits into an experience good. You have some experience once you buy a product, whether it's stopping some things, especially if it's something like an IDS, you can see, I stopped this and this and this attack. Unfortunately, there's a bunch of feedback you don't get. You don't get feedback on the attacks that got through undetected. That's the nature of being undetected. So it doesn't really fall under the experience good category very well, and a lot of the solutions for experience goods don't really apply. However, it falls well under a credence good, the kind of good that you really don't, it's really hard to tell unless you're an expert, unless you're someone in this room, basically, to how good a specific security product is. So if you look at typical solutions to the experience good, credence good problem, my page down button is kind of sticking sometimes, so feel free to notify me when my laptop doesn't like me. So Actually, my more common problem is the paste button when I have a password in my... But fortunately, that's not going to happen in there during this talk. So typical solutions to the experience credence good problem. The first one is, for like music, the most common one is you get a preview. You can listen to 5 seconds, or you hear it on the radio. You get some way of previewing the song before you have to buy it, and that way you know whether you like it or not. Unfortunately, previews don't work that well with security goods. Some companies have tried them, but like I said, there's a lot that's undetected and there's a lot of uncertainty about the future, so you really don't know how well it's going to work. So the two best solutions are reputations and expert opinions. You ask someone in this room, how good is this product? Is this a really good product? Someone who really knows their stuff should be able to answer it. And the other solution is people's reputations depend on having a good product. So for example, Counterpain, the reason they can charge extra is because they have Bruce Schneier's reputation on the line. If they turned out to be a really bad product, Bruce Schneier would lose his reputation as a security expert. So because his reputation is on the line, they have a lot more to lose if they have a bad product, so they have an incentive to make it a good product. A lot of companies out there that don't have such a reputation have no problem with making bad products because no one can tell whether they have a good or bad product. So they'll just make really bad products. So look for strong reputations in the market, like Bruce Schneier, for it to try to back up good products, and look for expert opinions around. Yes? Right, so it works pretty well, but do they really understand how good of a product they're getting? They can tell how well you respond to problems, but they can't tell how well you're actually catching problems, can they?
Well, I'm not sure that real customers can tell either.
You're right. That's the essential problem with credence goods is real customers can't tell, and you have to trust an expert. You have to trust someone to do that. So if I go to Counterpain, I use them for 6 months, and they say, we caught a bunch of attacks, and is that all of them? Is that half of them? You still have to trust Counterpain to tell you how well they were doing, because you're not really in a position to do it. Exactly. And that's why, in my opinion, that's why Counterpain is doing so good. The preview is probably not worth near as much as the reputation is. So this is the best answer I can come up with for how you value how much a product is worth. Because of that problem, is it extremely difficult for non-experts. So generally, ask for expert advice and look for people who have the reputation on the line for giving good advice, because that gives them incentive to do the right thing. So the next question I'm going to look at is, how much do you want to spend? You saw it for a second. How much do you want to spend on security for your enterprise? How much is worth spending? Should I spend a lot of money? I've talked to some places that essentially have no security budget. They just spend as much as they need to. Agreed, that was a government installation, so they had a reason. There are some places that most of the time, everyone I've talked to just have a very arbitrary, here's the security budget. It's more than we spent last year on security. It's roughly somewhat less than what we expected to spend if we didn't do it. But that's about it. That's about all they can say. They have no clue how much to spend. So my approach is I'm coming at it and looking at security as this gives options to the attacker. When you have these three things, when you have a vulnerability, so there has to be some vulnerability in the system such that an attacker can get in. The attacker has a certain amount of skill that they can exploit that vulnerability, and they also have the knowledge that vulnerability exists in your system. Once you have all three of those things, then the attacker has an option to attack you. And once they have the option, then they can exploit that any time they want to profit from on their part. So I'm basing my theory on that of financial options. Options are well understood in the financial market, and there's a lot of, since it's the financial market, all they care about is how do you put a price on things. So they have some really well-developed theory in this area. They have two different types of options. They have a call option and a put option, and they're largely similar. Basically, a call option is roughly the right but not the obligation to purchase some asset at some given price. So, for example, an option on stock says, I can purchase GE stock at $100 a share at any time between now and next year. That's a type of option. But it doesn't require me to purchase the stock. It just says I can if I want to at that price. So what I'll do, most likely, is I'll wait until if the stock goes up really high, I'll buy it because then I'm making a lot of money because if the stock's worth $200, I buy it at $100. I make an extra $100 profit there. But if the stock goes down to $50, I just won't do anything. I'll wait. And because of that, I can avoid losing money. So the option has nice value there because you can avoid losses while still getting profits. A good way to view options is via graphical analysis. I think it's a nice way to see how they work. So in this case, we have the asset value. The blue line is how much money you would have if you just bought the asset, like the stock, on your own. So if you look, these are the two different types of options. On the left is a call option. As you can see, this is mobile for a reason. So as you can see here, if the asset goes down, then you just don't do anything and you keep your money. You don't lose anything. So you start out with this amount and it just works. But if the asset goes up, then you can exercise the option and gain a lot of money, so your value goes up. Then a put option is the exact opposite. It's the right to sell something at a given price. So what that does is it allows you to make money off of going down. It's like, kind of like option shorting, in, if you know anything about stocks. So if the value goes down, then you can sell it at this price and make this amount of profit. However, if the option goes up, you don't exercise the option, and you don't gain or lose anything. So these are the two different types of options. And as you can imagine, holding one of these options is worth something to someone because there's a possibility of gaining. So a bunch of accountants, it turns out, Black and Scholes, figured out a nice formula for how do you value this. And this is roughly what it looks like. I don't know if you can see the green very well, but there's a curve right here for how much the option is worth given that given you hold the asset is at a current value. So if the asset value is right here, is right at your exercise price, then your option is worth a lot of money because there's the probability you'll go to the value will go to the right and you'll make money, and there's a probability it'll go to the left and you won't lose anything. So there's a chance you'll make money. There's a nice value to it. As the options goes way out here, there's less likely that you're going to need to stem a loss. So the value of it goes roughly to the value of the asset. However, as it goes way down here, there's less chance that you're actually going to be able to make money off of it. So the value goes to whatever your current amount of money you have is. So it's a nice way to show the option is worth more than the asset by itself because there's the potential in the future to make money. So if that seemed kind of theoretical and hard to understand, here's a nice example. Say, for example, we have our two of our founders, Chaos Punk and Froggy, and Chaos Punk decides he wants to hack Froggy because Froggy's starting this business. So Froggy has a database of credit cards that's worth $10,000 or so. They can sell or exploit this database somehow for $10,000. So Chaos Punk looks around and he says, I want to find a vulnerability in Froggy's database software. And he thinks it'll take him roughly 40 hours to find this vulnerability, and he makes $20 an hour. So to find a vulnerability, the search for the vulnerability will cost him approximately $800, roughly. However, if he actually exploits it, he has a 50-50 chance of being caught and thrown in jail for a year. And if he values a year of his life at $50,000 with a 50-50 probability of being caught, then the expected cost is $25,000. Since Froggy's database is only worth $10,000, it's not worth it for him to hack because he's got an expected cost of $25,000. It seems pretty stupid to hack. However, the question is it worth finding this vulnerability and opening up an option? So if we assume that Froggy's changes his database software every 4 years, then the options value is over $4,000 because Froggy's company might get better over 4 years and the database might be worth $100,000 in 4 years. In that case, it's easily worth hacking because you're making the expected profit of $75,000. I'll take $75,000. So because of the potential for it to go up, this option has value. Because it's an option, there's no way to lose money. It's just the potential for gain. So this option has, and this turns out, the option has a lot of value in this case. The $4,000 is easily worth more than the $800 search cost. So in this case, Brandon would search and find a vulnerability or two in Froggy systems, and then wait and see if Froggy's company is successful. If it is, then he hacks them. If it's not, then he goes on to something better for him. So this is a good example of how options can it's a good thing to think about when you're thinking about security. Yes.
So when you talk about using numbers like this to figure out how much security is worth to you, is that analysis really founded on the assumption that hackers think like this?
Not at all. Not at all. The nice thing about the options value is when you look at the formula, which I didn't put in here because it's pretty complicated. It's got weird integrals and stuff in it. If you look at the formula, it's all based on what your current assets are. So you don't. This is the option that hacker has. They don't have to think like that. That's how much it's worth. How much it actually is worth to hack you. How much it is to have the option to hack you. Right, and well, you assume this is how much. So closing the option is like regaining this $4,000 worth of options value. So since the value is dependent solely on your assets and the potential for your gain, it's possible to calculate it without knowing anything about the attacker, which is a really nice property of this model. Yes. Correct.
So I don't think
the traditional formulas. That's part of the later talk and later research, but yes, you're right. This is the basic model to try to understand the options and some of the implications it has, and then we go into extensions like that further on. How do you handle multiple? Because you're right. If there are multiple attackers, then it's an exclusive option. The first one wins, a winner-take-all strategy. And also, if there's multiple defenders, you can sometimes pool options together by sharing software. So one vulnerability can give you a bunch of different companies. So that the options value of that vulnerability is a lot more than any specific company.
Do the options change their price if the attackers value their lives at different values?
No, they don't, which is a nice feature because then you don't have to know anything about the attacker. You only have to know about your company. So if your company's value changes, then the options change value. But the value to the attackers doesn't change. So if you're an attacker, what does this kind of analysis mean to you? The first obvious one is wait. Once you find it, you can wait till the best time to attack. Agreed, Marius's point is very valid that sometimes waiting too long is bad, but sometimes it's worth it to wait and see if a couple days from now or a couple weeks from now is a better time. Try to time your attacks better. Another one is finding vulnerabilities is very important because it's important to have options in places. Always think about, as an attacker, what your options are, what places can you attack, what are all these options, because they all have some value to them. And another implication for defenders is that, first of all, patching your vulnerability removes these options. So because of that, it's quite nice. You actually gain, it's basically like gaining this value back from someone else as long as you remove the option. And this is how you can value how much security should be worth to you. Removing this option is the real value of security. This is what the goal of security should be, is removing these options from attackers. Because as long as they don't have the option on you, then they can't exercise it. And because of that, this is a good way to value how much security is worth to you overall. It's not going to help you for any specific product, but it can tell you how much you should spend, how much your security budget should be. Another implication for defenders that I think I forgot to put up here is because of the options, you can expect the big attacks to happen at the worst time also. So if you're about to do an IPO, that's a great time for an attacker to hack you. So you have to be especially careful then. And attackers should think about that and try to exploit them at that time, because that's when they'll get the most value from it. Yes? The $4,000, the value for the option. And another interesting consequence about the options, which is, I think, on the next slide. So this is how the options value changes. As the value of your company increases, the option value goes up. But as it costs more to do an exploit, so as the potential, like if the laws go and jail time goes up or fines go up, the potential exploit cost increases, the options value goes down. However, the longer the option is open, the longer the vulnerability exists, the option value goes up. And another interesting thing is the more uncertainty there is about what the value will be. So the more uncertainty about your company, the higher option value. So if you're a startup and you don't know whether you're going to be out of business or making $1 million next week, your option value is much higher than someone who is fairly well established. So the volatility also factors into this. And I wanted to catch that last point. So it's the potential for extremely harmful future damage is what should drive security spending. It's this potential that is what really important, not the past, it's the potential for the future. Yes? Correct. Yes, they can. In many cases, they're very related. A lot of companies value their reputation is extremely valuable to the company. So many companies consider that the reputation is most of the value of the company. And in that case, ruining a reputation by hacking and distributing some information they didn't want out can be worth the entire value of the company. So that's a very... yes, exactly. You would use the value of what you're trying to protect with security, the value of that and the potential for changes in that. Yes?
But in fact, they can always be the same because the hacker can always blackmail the company.
Yes.
And in that case, the price would be...
What I was thinking was something like the credit card database example, where if I'm a legitimate business and I have a credit card database that has a certain value to me, but if the attacker's interested in credit card fraud, sure, the value goes way up.
Yes.
Actually, one of the things that you heard is, like, when you're doing options, one of the reasons the value of the, my understanding, the value of an option goes up as you get closer to the execution time, the probability of a given
right
thing, which is not something that was explicitly defined. It's really a probability issue, you know, as far as the matrix. It seems like that what you're talking about is the value of the loss to the company is one aspect, as far as what you are actually going to use, what this gentleman was referring to. However, the value to the hacker, the person exploiting this, that actually contributes not so much to the formula way we're defining it, perhaps, but to the probability matrix of what is the probability of someone actually, you know, taking advantage of this exploit. You have to use the two. It would seem like you, just like in the case of an option, you'd have to use the two numbers in conjunction with each other to come up with a real number.
That might actually be a workable way to do it. The way I've been looking at it doesn't actually have the probability of being exploited in it, because if the option, the probability of exploitation, is the problem is the potential for the damage, because you don't know this probability. it's very hard to measure. It's very hard to know this probability. I'm trying to avoid trying to use that if possible. And this model, the only probabilities that factor into it is the probabilities for the change in the asset value. So yes.
Is what causes the probability of that, in the case of the options, the put or call, of that going up in value, is what you're actually causing the variance between the, you know, the
correct
value curve. And so it seems like you can't really rule out probability axis in this, in your calculation.
You're correct. The model that I'm using assumes basically a stochastic Brownian motion type of variance in the value of the asset. And so it assumes it varies. It goes up or down. It doesn't just make, like, all of a sudden I'm worth $20 billion today. Tomorrow I'll be worth $10. It assumes it goes up and down somewhat continuously, which for most financial models is fairly accurate. And because of that, and what matters is the value of the company, the value of the asset, not the value, not the probability of being accepted. And so there's definitely a probability built into the model, but it is, that's why, if you notice in the previous slide, there was a variance number I gave that I just assumed, and that does say what is the variance in the value as it changes. Yes. I can. I know a number of companies that are spending at least that much on security. I talked to Great American Financial Corporation, and their security budget is fairly large. I've talked to a number of government installations that have security budgets with well over half of their research budgets in their research institutions. So there are a number of places that have that. So if you look around, you can find that. But also, another theory is that a lot of people are underspending on security. So because they're not spending enough, because they're not spending that now, doesn't mean they shouldn't be. Most people are still suffering from that. And if you look at the total expenditures, frequently it is up in that range when you take into account actual attacks also. So you need to look at what the total expenditures are for everything. And I have seen numbers up in that range before. Any other questions before I move on? Okay, so the next section I was going to talk about is what is the value of patching? And this is a very simplistic model, but it attempts to show somewhat what patching can be worth to a company. And it actually asks the question of different types of patching. My laptop doesn't like me still. All right. So I'm assuming a fairly simple model of still one attacker and one defender. This will be generalized in the future, some of my future work. And we assume each period they get both the attacker and defender can research to try to find vulnerabilities, try to find these options. And whenever a defender learns about a vulnerability, they will immediately patch it as fast as they can. And whenever the attacker holds an option, whenever attacker finds ability, vulnerability, he'll hold it for the options value or attack if it's worth it for him. Correct. Okay. So, this, like, assuming that the patch exists, which in many cases isn't true. So, I'm assuming that they can patch if they want to. If there are other ways of patching than just the standard software patch, you can also write something into an IDS that would detect signatures of similar types of attempts, or find some other way of trying to prevent that type of attack. There are ways other than patches of trying to close holes that you know of. Yes.
Essentially, the model you can present is going to be the worst case scenario for the attacker.
That's one way of looking at it. So the first thing I looked at is it worth it for the defender to spend time and effort researching vulnerabilities ahead of the attacker? So what are the chances that the attacker will be able to get into and break into, will hold the option, will be able to break in even if the defender is actively researching new vulnerabilities also and patching them without telling the attacker those vulnerabilities? So, and if you look at, this is a probability curve of what are the, across the bottom is time. This is assuming there are a total of 10 vulnerabilities in the whole world. Yeah. We only wish for defenders, but fortunately it's not true. And if that's true, then as you can see, most of the time, the probability is almost one that the attacker will be able to get through. If you increase it to 100 vulnerabilities in the whole world, it's almost exclusively one for almost the entire time. So because of this, it turns out to have very little value to the defender to try to actively research vulnerabilities, because the chances that you're going to find vulnerabilities that the attacker is holding and waiting for is very low. So because of that, it's not all that worthwhile to try to research ahead of time for companies to research ahead of time and find vulnerabilities in their own products, but it's more worthwhile to use generic security products and to do post-patching. So the next topic is post-patching. This is after a vulnerability becomes known. Once you learn about it through some other means, like you were attacked and you figured out how they got through, or the vulnerability was published publicly on BugTrack or something like that. I'm going to assume a worst case for the defender for this, in that the way they learn about them is always by getting hacked. So they always lose amount of money, or in this case I'll say C, to the company every time they get hacked. And this is how they learn about vulnerabilities. They get hacked and they find out that this is an open hole that they try to fix. And that patching costs, there's some cost of patching, because patching is never, there's always problems associated with patching. And another thing I'm going to assume is that any unpatched vulnerabilities, if someone got in and we didn't patch it, then they can keep getting in and keep costing you this money. Because that's pretty much true if you don't patch. People will still keep exploiting it. Yes?
So if you find out about vulnerabilities by being hacked, which category does the cost of forensics fall into?
Patching. So in this case, doing a fairly simple sum to try to figure out what the value is if you don't patch anything, you get roughly, assuming an interest rate of 10%, because for simplicity, you get a value of 110 times the cost of being hacked. So it's going to be fairly expensive to not patch anything. If you patch, you get roughly an order of magnitude cheaper. The interesting thing about this is that the change is a constant based on the interest rate, and there is an additional cost of the patches, but the major change is the order of magnitude decrease due to not being re-exploited. So it is worthwhile to patch afterwards because of an order of magnitude decrease in costs approximately, but it's not going to be a great solve-all. There's still going to be a lot of costs associated, and those costs are mainly associated with how much you spend on being hacked, how much it costs you to being hacked. The patching doesn't gain a whole lot, but it does reduce it by about an order of magnitude. Do you have a question?
Yeah, there's a business.
Which? Correct. Correct. You're right. There isn't for the order of magnitude decrease, you're assuming that the relative cost of being hacked is much higher than that of patching. If that's not true, then this doesn't necessarily hold. Correct. So your point is that one of the nice things about patching that reduces the cost is that you can control when the downtime is and things like that to reduce the costs. Then you're playing a time game, yes. because that opens up that vulnerability, that option for the attackers for a little while. And one of the nice things about the options model that I presented a second ago is that you can figure out how long that is. And because of a very short time frame, hopefully, because hopefully you'll patching more than like once every 10 years. But it gives you a chance to figure out how much value that extra option, that extra time is worth to the attacker. Correct.
Rather than like they took something that basically is a
one-time hack, yeah.
It can't last, it that now is not going to, you know, continue replacement.
Correct. And
normally it's some variation out there. You have replacement, but not at X, you know, not at this flat rate model where they just got this, you know, slice out of time.
You're correct. And I tried to model the more variable cost, and it turned out to be, that you turned out to have very similar results, but it was a lot harder to understand the math. So that assumption was mainly made to simplify, but I did do modeling that did involve variable costs and trying to use option. Actually, I did use an options value to try to say this: they can possibly get up there, but they sometimes don't get all of it. And if it's a one-time cost, you can only steal credit cards. Are only worth stealing once, because once you have them, you already have them. Things like that, and similar results came up that it's about an order of magnitude decrease modulo the cost of patching, but you're not going to actually change much more than that. So the same results came up in that. It's just a little bit harder to see the math.
But I mean, it affects what you're saying, the patching afterward effect, basically. In other words, if they basically walk away with the keys of the kingdom, and you can't replace the keys of the kingdom, what is now, in this case, patching it? In fact, some people are saying mathematical results.
That's true. I did not assume what economics would call budget effects. You can't. There's no bankruptcy, essentially. And I didn't look at a whole lot, but as far as walking away with the keys to the kingdom, that's actually, it turns out to be very hard to do, to have a hacker completely put someone out of business just with like one single attack because they took everything. Mainly because due to the nature of information, me giving you information or you taking it from me without my permission doesn't mean that I don't have it anymore. If you steal all my credit card database, I still have the database. I can still function as a business. The main way you get value out of that is through alternative means. You can use the credit cards. You can blackmail me. You can do something like that. But I can still keep doing business. I still have the database. As far as some kind of denial of service, like deleting the data, that's more problematic. But a lot of companies have to deal with that kind of situation anyway with backups due to redundancy and just general failures. So many, many times they don't actually lose the data. Most of the companies I talk to don't have enough standard fault, like failure situation handling in place that there's no way to actually lose the data without barring like a fire in like some weird country where they store their backups. But there's no way purely via electronic means to lose the data. But there is, because you gain it, you gain a lot of value, and I can lose things like reputation. But I probably won't lose my essential means of doing business. So it is somewhat, and especially if it's blackmail or something like that, that is a fairly renewable stream of money. So there are cases where that directly applies, and the similar results apply even in cases where it doesn't. So that's my answer. Okay, so the next thing I looked at is, well, if pre-patching alone isn't really worth it, and post-patching is, what happens if we do both? Is it really worth the extra cost? And it turns out that as the number of vulnerabilities increases, the additional benefit you gain from pre-patching of researching vulnerabilities ahead of time goes to zero. Basically, the term on the right is the savings you get from pre-patching. And as you can see with n on the denominator, as n goes to infinity, that term goes to zero. So if you think there's a lot of vulnerabilities out there, then it's still not worth it to pre-patch, even if you're post-patching. And I think a lot of vulnerabilities out there is a fairly safe assumption. I think 100 that I used in the previous slide is really low, because I think there's more than that known about already. Actually, I'm sure of it. So to sum up this section, it's generally not worth pre-patching, and then another summary, if you look at, compare some of the results that I've given during the talk, it says post-patching is valuable, but what you're really trying to do is close off the options for the attacker, make sure that this whole route can't get in. So closing the options is much more valuable than closing any individual vulnerability, which is a nice fancy way of saying there's 100 vulnerabilities and the attacker has to find one, the defender has to find all of them. So, which I'm sure everyone here has heard and thought of and all that. So this is all I have to talk about today because I'm running out of time, I think, and also that's the limit of my research so far as stuff I have in a presentable form. Things I'm working on in the future is generalizations of this model to try to address what happens when there are multiple defenders or multiple attackers. There are many different interaction scenarios that have lots of interesting questions. Is it worth sharing data between attackers? Is it worth sharing data between offenders? Is it worth making the data public? Then another interesting question is the externality question for defenders. My security, how much I spend on security affects how secure you are. So a great example of that is viruses. How many virus emails you get coming into your mail server isn't dependent at all of any of your security, but it's dependent on the rest of the world's security. If everyone else has a secure system, then you're not going to get any viruses. If everyone else is running Windows, then you're going to have a ton of them. So that was a subtle jab on Windows. I worked at Microsoft, so I can do that. Not anymore, though. So that's economics models that as an externality, and most of the time, security spending does not take this fact into account. And I don't know if it can or should be taken into account, but it'd be interesting to try to see how much of an impact that actually has, because the world is so large. A little piece from everyone can be a lot of value for you without having to spend much. So those are some generalizations, and when you get those generalizations, you also open up what is the value of general security technologies like a Stack Overflow protector or an intrusion detection system that try to prevent whole classes of attacks, and does stopping a class of attacks, is that more worthwhile than just stopping specific attacks or random attacks? I actually do have a bunch of work on it. It's just not quite in presentable form yet. And that one I can talk about real quick. It's got model, finding a new class of attack is much harder than finding a new vulnerability in an existing class. So discovering a new way of breaking in other than buffer overflows is much harder than finding a new buffer overflow in an already existing program. Buffer overflows is a class of attacks that is already well known. Finding a new class is much harder than finding an example of an old class. So would closing off a whole class, like using some kind of Stack Overflow protection so that you can't do Stack Overflows, is that worth more than the sum of the patches because there's going to be an extra cost associated on the attackers? And that's an interesting question. My theory is yes, but I don't have the math to back it up yet. So that, I believe, is everything I had to say. Is there any questions? Yes. That's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. It fits in the model as being lumped in with the attacker category, but it'd be interesting to see if that separates, if anything interesting comes out. So that's a good area of future research. I'm on. I take that. Anyone else? That's a good point. Just to reiterate, his question is, what about how the value of things can change extrinsically to the company? Like the value of a credit card in a credit card database can change because the credit cards are implementing more strict security measures to prevent you from using them for fraud. Or another way, they could go up because there is because the credit lines got increased. So it could go either way. And it's hard to say, But the interesting thing about that is it would somewhat fit in the model as part of the volatility in the value of the asset. So there is an uncertainty about the future, and because of that, there's a volatility in the asset, and that is taken into account in the options model. The more volatile it is, so the more likely those things are going to happen, the higher the options value. Any other questions? Thank you.